afternoon, good evening. This is the Duty Domestic Staff Drafting Team call on the 25th September 2012. On the call today we have Alan Greenberg, Xiaolong Renault, Olivier Crépin-Lebrun, Yao Viatuhun, Eduardo Diaz, Tijani Benjima, Holly Reich, Devin Antiluxin, and Colton Samuels will be joining us shortly. We have apologies from Darlene Thompson, Simpson Suknanan, and Fatima Makambonevu. From staff, we have Matash Jani and myself, Maki Peregrin. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you, and over to you, Alan.
Thank you very much. Let me get back to the agenda. Item number two on the agenda is pointers to the template that we'll be using once we start drafting stuff, which will be very soon after this meeting, and to the sandbox, which we're using as the repository for meeting reports and which will have the draft text that will later be moved into the template. We don't need to look at them right now, but I keep them in the agenda just so you have easy pointers to them. The item number three on the agenda is something which we should have been looking at a long time ago, except I, and I suspect everyone, forgot it existed until very recently. That's a relatively extensive position description for ALAC members and liaisons, which was written round about 2000 and something, 2008, I believe. I found it last night. I put it into the agenda so everyone could look at it. It's still operational in that it was formally approved by the ALAC and never rescinded. I think we need to very quickly look at it, decide how much of it is still relevant, how much belongs in the rules of procedure as opposed to in a position description, and make any adjustments. As I said, I haven't gone through it, and I don't think I want to at this meeting, but I would like that to be assigned as a homework task that we do over the next week, because I think we need to very quickly make any changes to what we've done so far based on what's there and what we may have forgotten in the interim since it was written. Any questions on that? Matt has it in the Adobe screen. You can look at what it looks like, but you should be able to get it just by clicking on that link. Any questions? Yes, Holly.
Sort of a general one. Alan, I've been reading what you've been putting in more generally, and I think maybe you and I can have an offline Skype thing because there's just an awful lot of overlap. What I also think in looking at those definitions, you're calling them a definition, and we're running absolutely flat against a discussion I think we had probably 2-3 weeks ago, which is, do you have it in a definition section, a full definition, or is it placed somewhere else and you just have a pointer?
Because Holly, what definitions are you talking about? Are these in that position description now?
The screen that was before what was there.
Okay.
All that yellow text is, it looks to me very wordy for a definition. And that's, once again, being part of the definition section, I'm thinking you and I are probably going to have to sit down somewhere in a quiet corner and work through what's the definition and what's the description and where we put each.
Okay. Holly, that document is one we finished with. I don't know why it was up, but it didn't need to be up. It's dead.
Okay.
Some of the content has now moved into the what is currently on our agenda as the meeting notes of the meeting of July 24th.
What's on my screen is position description for ALAC members and ALAC.
I know what I wanted to be talking about. You were looking at what was on the screen before and it is somewhere else now. So perhaps we can hold that discussion until we get to that document.
Okay. Fine. Thanks.
Eduardo?
I'm confused. This document that you're talking about now is what? It's an old document. It's not part of our rules and procedures, the core and rule of procedures?
It was a position description for ALAC members and liaisons. which, if I remember correctly, was put together because one of the issues in the ALAC review said we should have position descriptions. Cheryl can correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't need to correct you, Alan. It's Cheryl here, and you're absolutely correct. These are current. This was a resolution and adoption by the ALAC.
That's correct.
And as it is written, it still stands.
That part I knew. I was just verifying. I think it came about because of the recommendation in the external review, in the independent review. It was approved on the 12th of October 2008, if I remember correctly, by an online vote. And I don't really remember that. I looked it up last night. And it is still standing. But I think, therefore, we need to look at it and decide, is there anything there which needs to really be in the rules of procedure? Someday we need to look at it to say, do we need to update the position description? That's a different task than today. So I've given it to you. I'd like everyone to look at it. And on the list or in the wiki, please make comments on any of the issues there that you think need to be in the rules of procedure as opposed to in a separate document.
Okay,
go ahead.
Sorry, I have another follow-up. So this document, you know, once we finish the rules and procedures, the process, is it going to stand or is it going to go away?
It is standing right now until it is revoked. I suspect it will never be revoked, but it may well be revised.
Okay.
I'm guessing this document is 3 pages long. I'm guessing there is things there that is a level of detail that we do not want in the rules of procedure, but probably still is appropriate.
Okay, but somehow if we're going to revise this later on, I mean, we have to cross-reference between each other and they should have the same type of wording, right?
Well, when we revise this, we'll worry about making sure it's consistent with the then rules of procedure. Our job today is to incorporate into the rules of procedure anything that was there that we simply haven't thought about today.
Okay.
It's just a check to make sure that we didn't forget something important. So it's another list of attributes that may help us get the right rules in the rules of procedure.
Thank you.
Holly?
Back again. I do have a question. How many documents like this are out there? Because we should be cross-referencing stuff. It's just I haven't seen this document. And are there other documents that we should be at least pointing people to so they know that there's text somewhere that's going to modify rules of procedure? And indeed, what should be in rules of procedure and what should be in another document? And I take it what is point. Should we be trying to combine documents so people can go one place instead of having to go all over the place?
Well, I've had a hard day already. So
how's your dog?
I am not going to get into a discussion of why and how we need a website where we can find things.
I agree.
But simply let that statement stand on its own. And I think I'm answering your question.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
I won't tell you what I had to go through to find it and then to find out when, in fact, we approved it. It wasn't easy. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Just in response to, just to some extent, what Edvita was raising, but I guess also with Holly, I virtually most of what is in this document, there's very little I would be changing in this document, the way this document is written as a annex, right? Because that's what it should be. It should be an annex or supplementary document that is referred to by the rules of procedure. For example, in a rule, you could, and I would suggest should, have an expectation that you will abide by the rules. There's a number of organisations I've been in where, you know, under section 1 point whatever, as a member of, insert whatever it is, you will abide by the following rules. Now, when you have that type of thing, then these supplementary documents are very, very important. They're the ones that can get changed if you're leaner, more high-level set of rules just refer to them. And I think, Eduardo, that means that, yes, this can be modified, but it stands until it is modified, and it should be referred to in the rules. Okay?
Yeah, I agree completely. The reason I brought it into this group right now is also because I suspect, but I don't know, there may be some snippets there that are important enough that we want them in the rules. Like, I suspect there's something there about liaisons representing the views of the ALAC, not personal views, which we do happen to have already caught, but there may be some others like that. And that was the reason I'm introducing it now, to make sure that we didn't forget something important. Also to tell people we have it, which, because as Holly, I'm sure most of the people who aren't as old and gray as I am don't know that. Old or gray, I guess. Some of us aren't gray. Okay, I have nothing else to say on this document, but please read it, and your comments are appreciated. Yaovi, you have your hand up.
Thank you very much, Yaovi speaking. I just want to be sure that I understand what you said, that these documents will be used for the rule of procedure. So it will not be a different document. So we have a lot of information inside. So we'll use it and incorporate the content to the current rules of procedure. Is it correct?
The rules of procedure will make reference to this document, but it may be that some of the items in this document we think are important enough that they need to be in the rules themselves. And today's question is, please review this document and see if there's anything that you think is so important that we want it cast in concrete in the rules.
Okay.
All right. Let's go on to the next link. We're now looking at review of the minutes, or at least the records of our meetings. And we'll start with the one of July 24th. I don't remember if there's anything really to discuss, but it will pop out if there is. So if we can bring that one up on the screen, I would appreciate it. For those of you who are clicking on it yourself, I am looking at it, and there are no items that are left over for discussion. The items that were in red in that document, if you remember, and it will pop up on the screen soon. Matt, in case you're, what we're looking for is the essentially the sandbox webpage, and that's what we'll be spending the next half hour or so on. There were things in red that needed to be discussed at successive meetings. They are now underlined, which says they have been addressed. The outcomes of those discussions are in blue. There is no underlined red, so we have nothing that we need to discuss from the meeting of the 24th. The meeting of the 16th of August, which is just below it, and as soon as Matt gets it up, you'll see that one, does have some things that are still underlined. And what? Oh, we have... Okay. Yes, you should be able to scroll down. I hope I'm not making people's... Am I making people's screen scroll? Or does everyone have control themselves?
Everyone should be able to scroll on.
Okay.
Their
own. So if you want to look at the meeting of the 24th of July... Why is the beginning 4th of September?
Just go ahead.
Okay. I don't know what's on the screen. I'm ignoring it.
Alan, it's Olivier.
Yes?
You're asking, the blue, what's in blue are the decisions of the meeting of the 4th of September. And I guess the black is the records of the 24th of July meeting. And the red issues
you're right. Okay. No.
So that's why you get this three colors.
Okay, sorry.
Welcome to use another color as well for today.
The 4 hour sleep I have is showing through, so thank you. Okay, if you look at the record of the meeting of the 24th of July, you'll see there is no red that is not underlined, so we have addressed everything of that issue. It's frozen now. If you scroll down to the next meeting, which is the meeting of the 16th of August, there are a few things that are still underlined, that are still in red but not underlined, therefore not addressed. And both of them, I remember, are things that I asked people in the work group to do, but without making explicit assignments. Maybe we have to make explicit assignments. The first one was, we've all agreed that the definition of ALAC member should be a little bit more detailed and more refined than we have right now. The position description I posted may help with that. Does anyone volunteer to draft something on that, please? Holly, you have her hand up. Thank you.
Alan, it was previously up. It is not in relation to volunteering for this. I'm just pointing out, we yesterday discussed the executive committee in the briefing I did. This is much more extensive, and this is where I start to think you and I need to sit down and say, what are you doing? Because this is far more extensive and probably far more informative and probably far more useful.
But, I hope so. Since we were tasked with identifying what does the executive committee and among other things do, I hope ours is fleshed out.
It's fleshed out, and I guess my question is, what do you want the SDT team to do with this, other than just take it whole as solus and either leave it where it is or put it somewhere in the structure? You see what I mean? I'm now puzzled by what we're doing.
What we have here is notes from meetings.
Okay.
We have not yet tried to draft it into text. That's the next step.
And where to put it is the next question.
Well, we're going to try to synthesize, by I say we, it's Eduardo and I who are the pen holders, going to try to synthesize, if I can get that word out, this into something which is meaningful, not a lot of random bullets.
Okay.
And then you can work from there. You may be able to cut and paste. You may have some work to do. I'm not sure.
It looks like there's probably a bit of work to do, and that's fine. I would suggest leaving bullet points because I think at the end we decide what format we put stuff in, what are the headings and so forth. I'm not sure we can do an overall heading, what's a subheading, because at this stage I'm still a bit not clear about what the outline looks like, and maybe I can propose something given, because I've read what you've put in the Confluence thing about three stuff yesterday. It's a lot of really good stuff. I just think we need to draw some lines about what you're doing and where it fits, and then how the DSC thinking works with that or incorporates it.
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Cheryl. All we're trying to do here, and I'm part of that team also. So I'm not absolving myself of any responsibility, but you know, this group has talked about a lot of things, some of which are definitely within our official domain, and some things which wandered out because it was an issue we had to address as we went along, and that includes things like the exact timing of some of the selections, because it was critical to how the executive committee or the new name would work. So we're going to try to document what we have, and some of it may need to be transported and maybe discussed with other groups.
Okay.
More than that, I'm going to defer to Cheryl if she has any wisdom.
Look, there's no wisdom, Cheryl, for the record, there's no wisdom going to be imparted on this, except in my immediate response to Holly when she said how much should the other drafting team be doing with this. My reaction was as little as possible, if anything at all.
Thank you.
So where it can be cross-linked, referred to, or cut and pasted, then, yeah, do so. But as we put it into the master, that's when it's going to be a lot easier to see that, you know, you might have a title, name, and a very brief description of something that will exist up in Section 1 that then literally links within the document to a more fulsome discussion elsewhere in the rules, and that's okay too.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the definition of ALAC member is not going to be six paragraphs long. But whether your section on structure of the ALAC needs to have more refinement, to some extent, there's no right and wrong answer, and to some extent, we're going to have to see what looks right and what makes sense as people look at it. You know, sometimes what sounds great in theory falls apart when you actually put words into it.
I think the glass of whiskey is probably necessary.
I would support. I can recommend several brands if you'd like.
Thank you.
I don't recommend you mix them, however, but serially it's fine. Okay, can we go ahead? Now, I was, when Holly put her hand up not volunteering, I was asking for volunteers to try to draft something, gleaning together the discussions we've had, the position description. Is someone willing to take this on? And come up with something, you know, it's not the ultimate document. It's just something that we can then discuss. So, do I see any hands? I see two, Holly and Eduardo. Holly?
Yeah, I'll be a bunny, but I think I will have I want probably an email with you that just I have a questions as to exactly what the terms of reference will be before I plunge into this.
If you're volunteering, I will give you any time you need.
Thank you.
Okay.
What happened to the whiskey?
I'll even make the recommendations on the whiskey at the same time. Eduardo.
So is Holly volunteering for doing that, or
Holly just did volunteer.
Okay. Okay, fine.
But we have another volunteer request in the next line.
No problem.
The next one I think is pretty simple. We have said everyone who is essentially putting their name up or has their name put up for a position must submit a statement of interest. The question is the now standardized statement of interest that we are asking all ALAC and associated people to fill out, is the contents of that sufficient? So I'd like someone who has a little bit of comprehension of conflict of interest issues to look at that and decide, is there anything missing from the standardized statement of interest, or can we just rely on it?
I can give it a look and check with a couple here.
All right. Holly put her hand up first, but since she's already has one assignment, I would gladly have you do this one. If Holly would like to work with you, she's willing to. You're willing to work together.
I'm going to concentrate on what we've got, what I've got.
Okay.
So far.
But your hand went up again, so.
Oh, I lied. I didn't mean it.
Okay, so I will look at it then.
It's down. Promise.
All right, and the last underlined item is a repeat of the first one, so we don't need to worry about it. The next, Olivier, yes, sir.
Thanks, Alan. It's Olivier for the transcript. You mentioned it's standardized SOI, or
we have this wiki site where you answer a bunch of questions, and you can even put your picture in on it.
Yeah,
haven't you done yours?
It's changed. It's changed now, so there's a new format. I thought
I
mentioned that. As of today.
Okay. That's
what you call fresh
then
news.
Then it's a good thing we assigned it today and not yesterday.
Correct, yeah. I'll copy the link over to the chat, and you can all have a look at it. There's an announcement that will go out today.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of activity on it, but I didn't bother looking at what the activity was.
You being very lucky, you've been in there before everyone else. So your SOI has been ported to the new system.
Yes, I noticed my name changed from Alan to Alan Greenberg, I think so.
Ah, there you go. I'll put it in the chat in a second.
Okay, thank you. Eduardo?
I didn't answer the question.
Question about, this is for Olivier. So this change of new SOI, did they keep the old information there? Do we have to re-enter it, you know?
I think it changed to a new format.
I can answer that, actually. The format was changed, and Ken Bohr, who did the change, was very great in taking all of the information that was there from those people that had already done their SOI using the automated system and transferred it over. So yours, Eduardo, is on there as well already.
Okay, great.
Alan, Cheryl here.
Yes, Cheryl.
The answer to your question as to whether or not that, however it is formatted and information, is sufficient still needs to be discussed. My initial response is yes, it should be enough. You'll note a small amount of caution there. I'd like to see that as enough under normal circumstances. When it comes, of course, to some particular skill sets that one might require, you might need to, but they wouldn't need to sort of have mandatory listings, you may need to make very certain that the key criteria and the expectations for any of these roles is well articulated when you're calling for people, so that they can refer to their SOI, bulk standard, which should cover this off and not mean that this is, the rule could probably be all ALEC members are expected to complete and maintain as current under continuous disclosure their SOI, insert link to the space type rule. I think that's probably worthwhile. But for example, if you want someone to, well, the SAC liaison is the easiest. You've got to have very particular skill sets to be even considered to be worthy of putting forward, and then the SAC can still reject you or accept you. So there's always a bit of titivating, but I think as a basis, the new form stuff should do.
Okay.
What we don't want is for people to assume that they only need to fill it out the once and not keep it updated.
Okay, so what I've noted here is pending your, based on your quick analysis and pending Eduardo's review, the SOI is probably sufficient for standard-type roles, but there may need to be augmented based on the specific needs of the position.
Yep.
Did I capture that?
Yep, and the continuous disclosure is something else.
I also noted that we have to maintain as well as set the SOI if it doesn't already say that, and I'm not sure if it does or not. Okay. Okay, now on to the meeting of the 4th of September.
Alan?
Yes, sir.
Still on the SOI, it's Olivier.
Okay.
Just to make sure, to be clear, so we're making it mandatory for ALEC members to publish their SOI?
I believe the ALEC made that decision. If not,
okay.
If not,
yeah,
the rules of procedure will make it a decision that will be made by their adoption.
Well, no, it was already made to have SOI published, but and I gather that it was made, and this is only from memory, that, yeah, the ALEC did say, yes, we want our SOIs out there. What we want to also find out is whether we want the liaisons with a capital L and the liaisons with the small L to need an SOI as well on there. And then the third question is whether we want everyone else to have SOIs. And what I was going to suggest was for the ROPs to mention that it is encouraged for others to have their SOIs on there.
If I may, can I follow on to that, Olivier? I like where that concept is heading. I think anyone who's in a representational role, and that is certainly your capital L liaison, should have it as a mandate. Arguably the lower case liaisons who are in many cases speaking on behalf of ALAC and at large should also have the SOIs mandatory, and the rest should be strongly encouraged.
I would make a suggestion which is complementary but a little bit further than that, that I would suggest we use the same rule as the GNSO uses, that is a member of any working group, and that's a lowercase working group. A working group by any name must submit an SOI.
If I could put up a big green tick, which I can't, I would be doing exactly that.
Okay. I've already made the note that we decided that, so. No, I haven't actually, but I have now. No disagreements. We have other hands. Tajani.
Thank you, Alan. I think that anyone who is representing ALAC or at large has to submit SOI. So not only working group members, anyone representing ALAC or at large.
Yeah, that,
the ALAC members.
That I think we already have. Or certainly Cheryl said that. So we are now saying anyone who is on the ALAC, anyone who is appointed to a position by the ALAC, anyone who has volunteered to be on a working group, subcommittee, drafting team, or whatever of an ALAC needs to disclose their basic information. If there's any disagreement, let's hear it.
And anyone who is in other working groups, maybe not representing the ALAC, but still in other working groups, even as an individual, which sometimes gets tagged as ALAC, and I've noticed that to happen.
I think that comes under the auspices of Cheryl's encourage others who are active to do that.
Yes.
And, of course, we also need to make it... not so much in the rules, but in the fluffy bits of selling the rules. By having this done, it's a very simple measure when members of the ALAC and our at-large community are then engaged in other work groups in other parts of ICANN, then in what's often, as Alan described in GNSO, mandatory, most of the material's already there. In fact, it would probably supersede it. So...
May I suggest a new SOI field, by the way, which I don't think is there. It's not our job, but if someone could, staff could note it, and we can discuss it at some other time, languages spoken. Maybe in more detail of spoken and written, but given that we're now looking at extending this past the active workers, to people on working groups and discussion groups within RALOs, language may be an interesting thing to know.
Alan, it's Cheryl here. It's not our job, as you say, but I think that's a conversation that does need to be had. I, for example, am still very keen to have me, and I'd encourage others, to maintain their own home page on Confluence, where a lot more detail on a lot more things can be put.
Interesting.
And I wouldn't mind an active link to that. I'd put mine in just as a, you know, because I could, but I'd actually encourage people to do that. But again, it's one of those encouraged ones.
Okay. Eduardo.
This is a question. I always hear you talking about capital letters, working groups versus, I guess, lower case working groups. Is there a difference when you say that? I mean, what do you mean with that? Because I have heard that before.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm using terminology. I'm using concepts between the meetings I participate in, and I get confused sometimes which is which. In the meetings and administration group, we decided that we would define a term, probably working group, but we may come up with a different set of letters. But it means a working group or a subcommittee or a standing committee or a drafting team. You know, it means one of the vehicles that the ALAC uses to do work. It would probably be better if we didn't call it a working group, but called it some term that we weren't using to describe actual groups. But no one has come up with it yet. So for the moment, I'm using lowercase working group.
Persons, capital letters, working group.
Capital letter working group is a working group.
Right.
This is a lowercase working group because it's a drafting team.
Okay, now I got it.
It's a capital letter drafting team.
Okay, so anything with lowercase working group means it's not a working group, it's something else.
Or it could be a working group. We need a better.
It's getting as confusing as cricket when you're out here.
We need a better set of a better definition. Let's work on that. But that's not this meeting's responsibility, and we're running through time quickly. Yoavi, please.
Okay. Thank you, Yami. Speaking. It's just a question. It's not. We said any ALAT member will have a SOI, and we said any members. Representing ALAT in working group will need also an SOI. Is this what we said?
That plus any member of an ALAC group, working group, drafting team, standing committee, must have an SOI.
Not necessarily an ALAC member.
Not necessarily an ALAC member.
Okay, thank you.
So essentially anybody who we are going to be working with within the ALAC structures, not necessarily the RALO structures, RALOs may wish to make their own rules, must have an SOI. So if I meet you on one of our meetings, one of our teleconferences, I should be able to look up your SOI.
Okay.
Holly.
Sorry. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Alan, just a thought. If you use the term working group and you define it as broadly as you have, and then you use the text that we were talking about yesterday, which is every working group must have the following rules, then you don't have to go any further because each working group will have a statement about what it is, about whether it's open or closed, what its terms of reference, what its duration is. And that saves you from having to put details other than working groups, you can then look up what it is and how it's framed and how its membership is described. Is that a better way to solve the problem?
I'm not sure, but it's the other meeting's job, and I really want to try to keep focused. We have enough work in this.
All right, sorry. Yes, just a suggestion to.
It's just too easy to go off on problems we don't need to solve.
Okay.
And. On the meeting of 4th of September, there are a number of unresolved issues, that is, things we did not fully discuss or issues that became obvious as I was trying to formulate the notes. The first one is that, if you remember correctly, and we're now under terms, that's on page of the scrollable one.
Here we go. Yes, pass my comment.
It is page 4-5.
Yes.
There is an expectation that the chair, if there is an expectation that the chair, which is formally a 2-year position, will be leaving after 1 year, and that, of course, since we don't enforce slavery, that is allowed. We expect the existing chair to give sufficient notice that a new chair can be named in the time frame that we've identified. I think that's a reasonable rule to include. The second one is we made a decision saying that if a vacancy is filled mid-year, the term begins upon finalization of the selection. At the discretion of the ALAC, the term could run until the following AGM or that plus the period of the next term. So, you know, that would be equivalent to what we did with the board member, where there was 6 months left in the previous term, and we simply did one appointment for the 3 years plus 6 months, mm-hmm. which has now become 4 years. And I'm suggesting that at the ALAC's discretion, it should be the AGM or the completion of the incumbent's term.
No.
So instead of having to specify how long the term is, what we're saying is, again, give the ALAC discretion to make decisions based on the reality of the people available and the skills that can be put into a given position. Holly.
I've just encountered this particular issue in a couple of other situations. I would say it goes to the AGM, which, given that somebody was selected for particular reasons in a particular process and then somebody else comes in, it's only fair to go back to the constituency to say, you now have an opportunity to look at that person and extend or not the term. Otherwise, you wind up with the extension of the term of somebody who was not selected in the processes that are set down.
But we're talking about all the positions we're talking about are positions where the ALAC makes the selection. So it is the ALAC that is the constituency.
I would still rather AGM, and then you can have a fresh look.
I think you're going to find people reluctant sometimes. Sometimes you'll find someone who says, I'll take it on for the rest of this year, but that's all. And sometimes you'll say, I'm not going to take it on for just the rest of this year. I either want the position or not. There's too much of a learning curve or whatever to take it on an interim. So what I'm suggesting is the ALAC at the time have the discretion to make that choice.
Well, it worries me that
and any ALAC can always say we will only appoint to the AGM.
Yes, and then we have the possibility of renewing. Are you interested? Anyway, look, that's just my view.
Okay, let's hear from
other
people. Tijani?
And
Cheryl, after Tijani.
I think that deciding on a term of 2 years for the chair only like this will not be very very wise, because we can be in the situation of today. We have Olivier as appointed chair for the next term. If it is 2 years term, we are not sure that Euralo will elect him or select him as an elect member. So I think that the best is to appoint him for 1 year, appoint him for 2 years if his term in the ALAC permitted.
Okay.
Otherwise, it will be 1 year.
I think you're reopening
it. If it is only 1 year, the next year we will appoint a new chair for 2 years too. Not for the remaining second year of Olivier.
Okay.
Thank you.
We've already made the decision that we can appoint someone to a 2-year term even though they are not guaranteed to be on the ALAC in the second year. That is, they simply have to have, they normally have to have the ability to be there through being appointed through either a RALO or a NOMCOM. And we did add a normally so that there may be exceptional circumstances where we want to violate that, assuming legal agrees. Now we're simply talking about what happens if there is a mid-year vacancy. And what I'm suggesting is that we give the ALAC at the time the discretion to appoint essentially for up to the remainder of the year and a term, which is how we exercise the board position. On the other hand, because of the people available or the decision of the ALAC that they want to do it only to the end of the incumbent's term, then that's something they could do also.
Cheryl,
yeah, Cheryl, go ahead.
I am firmly in the camp for ALAC that says any casual vacancy or vacancy being filled by someone should only be to the term that the person they are replacing had. So I'm actually disagreeing with it being done the way the board, et cetera, has done it before. It's fine for them and so be it.
No,
I'm very much in the, if for some reason 3 months before the end of Olivia's two-year term he needs to be replaced, that replacement only gets 3 months.
Okay. I wasn't referring to how the board does. I was referring to how the ALAC did it to select their board member.
Yeah, I understand that, but there was a whole lot of complexity on why that happened.
Yeah.
And we actually used a CCNSO precedent. So.
Yeah.
All that aside, I'm firmly in there for our purposes, for casual vacancies, all casual vacancies, whether they are for capital L liaisons, for the chair of the ALAC in a two-year term, or for other leadership, which is usually only one-year term, that any replacement only serves to the end of their term.
So a midterm, you're suggesting a midterm vacancy is replaced till the end of the term?
Correct.
Yep. Australia has adopted a position.
I didn't hear whatever that last comment was.
I'm just pointing out that ALAC has come up with a position. The Australian contingent on this call seems to be...
Ah, okay, fine. Sorry, there was a beep halfway through what you said. All right, that's Holly speaking and saying the Australian contingent believes that it should only be the end of the incumbent's term. Is there a general consensus? Can we see any ticks? A tick if you agree with that, an X if you want the ALAC to have more flexibility at the time.
Please, can you repeat the work we tick on, please?
Yes. A tick if you think if there is a midterm vacancy, that is someone resigns or is otherwise unable to serve, that the replacement must only be for the rest of that term, not for any further term. If you agree with that, it's a tick. If you want the ALAC to have more flexibility, it's an X.
Can you record my tick?
I recorded your tick already because...
But, Alan...
Yes?
That doesn't mean you can't run for reappointment.
I understand.
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so we're changing what I was proposing and what we decided last time. I was suggesting a modification to what we decided. We are changing what we decided last time to say a midterm vacancy is only to the end of the incumbent's term. Okay. We had everyone voting in that direction except for Carlton, who did not. All right. Decision made. Next item is the last bullet under terms. We never had a discussion. Go ahead. Someone trying to talk?
It's Olivier Allen.
Olivier, yes.
I have my hand up still on this question. If there are term limits for any reason whatsoever, and I don't even know whether there would be term limits imposed or not, would the remainder of a term count as a full term or not count as a full term? In other words, would a person, let's say there are 2 months left, the new person would be term limited by something, and the 2 months would count as a full 2 years.
May I suggest we defer that question till we finish the last bullet on this on this section of should we have any term limits? If we don't have any term limits, we don't have to worry about how a half term counts.
Yes,
Cheryl.
Come back to me.
Okay. Well, it's term limits. Currently, we have no term limits in officer positions. We have various term limits that apply to how people get onto the ALAC. We do not have term limits for how long you can serve in an officer or a liaison or appointee or other positions appointed by the ALAC. Cheryl has her hand up. Cheryl? Is Cheryl still with us?
I am. I just had to unmute, and by the time
okay.
the silly eco system tells me that I've been unmuted,
ah.
I sent okay. Now, I'm in the... For ALAC, I don't see any reason why we need to have term limits.
Hey.
Not how people get into the ALAC, that's a different thing. For the ALAC, for roles in the ALAC, I honestly don't think term limits are as valuable as having the right people at the right time with the right jobs and having rotation of talent and growth of talent appropriately managed, but not as a compulsory exercise. Because the last thing you need is to absolutely rip out by the testicles a piece of work, a work group, or even, heaven forbid, the management of the ALAC totally, by sticking somebody in because they're a woman and they happen to come from Australia, and we have some peculiar, bizarre gender equity rule, or if we have a, you know, you can only have one continuous or two continuous terms or whatever. That's more scary than it is positive. So I'm firmly in the non-affirmative action camp on this one. So.
All right. I certainly support that. Because I have been in too many organizations where someone has to leave because of term limit and they're replaced by someone who's effectively incompetent. Sad, but I have seen it. Do we have consensus? I see no hands. And Carlton says she speaks for me here. We have a tick from Eduardo. All right, we have no term limits. Olivier, we do not need to go back and discuss whether the partial term counts. Next point. This was in officers and appointees. It's something I think I said, but we never actually made a decision. The current rules say the ALAC and at-large, if they accept to serve on behalf of the ALAC and at-large community for the good of the entire community, working to bridge differences and build consensus. And I'm not sure what the expression means and if we want it there or not. I would prefer to replace it with something that that I could understand. Does anyone have any thoughts or suggestions?
Can you repeat that, Alan?
Yeah, it's the second bullet under all officers and appointees. It says they shall accept to serve on behalf of the ALAC and at-large community by acting for the good of the entire community. That I can accept. Working to bridge differences and build consensus.
Alan, Cheryl here.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Thanks. Look, these are historical artifacts. They're still valid points, but they are very, very much historical artifacts. I think if the intent of them is going to be enshrined anywhere, it would be up at almost a preamble level to the rules where one is describing what ALAC is and what the expectation of an ALAC member or representative is. And to that end, that particular language was born out of debates that actually came from the interim ALAC, so we can do what we like with it. I think everyone understands the intent that regardless of your own personal views or even the views of your region, decisions you make when you're acting as the ALAC and on behalf of the ALAC have to be in the best interest of ALAC and at large within ICANN.
Yeah. So you're happy to drop the bridge differences and build consensus because that is part of doing the job, depending on what the job is that day.
Correct.
Okay. Any objection? Oh, we have hands up. Holly?
Yeah, just first of all to say, by the way, Carlton voted for what we said about serving only to the AGM, looking at the chat. I would say, can we get rid of this language here? Because what it reads is it's one huge, massive compromise that you're doing one and you're doing the other, and I think it's incredibly confusing.
Well, it also implies we have a lot of bridges to build and we have too many differences. So
yeah,
that may be true, but I don't think we need to advertise it like that. Okay.
I think we can we leave it just as for the good of the entire community, and I like Cheryl's suggestion. Let's put something in the preamble and then let's not use the language again.
Well, I don't mind the but also recognizing difference and enabling different opinions to be shared. I'm not offended by that.
Well, you know, it's the but that it basically sets one side against the other. One would hope that if you're working for consensus, you're not going to stress the fact that there are differences.
How about dropping the but also?
Well, I would drop the but also, and I'd get it out of here and put it up in the preamble
okay.
or something.
Okay, so you're suggesting put a period after community, drop the rest of the sentence. Cheryl, you happy with that?
Oops, I don't want to do that.
took forever to get unmuted to say yes.
Okay. I'm happy for that. I have no problem to Jenny. Tijani, are you muted? We're dialing back. All right, we'll go back to Tijani when we get back, when he gets back on. All right, and the only other item from the last meeting is a plea Cheryl made at the end. Can we please not use he, she? And presumably, Cheryl, you also meant don't use S in brackets, H-E, and use something else. I commented that the typical thing people use is they, which the grammarists, grammar people, whoever they're called, whatever they're called, object to because we're then replace a singular pronoun with a plural pronoun, which offends some people greatly. Cheryl, do you have any suggestions on what we do?
It takes even longer to unmute every time I try and unmute, I swear. However, look, I'm actually, I'm not going to die in a ditch over it. I just think that, you know, and nor am I going to, you know, we have an opportunity to say chairperson or just chair. I'm happy with just chair. We have an opportunity to pluralise, which I think is okay, providing it translates well. And that I'd leave up to other advice. But, you know, the he, she thing, or having something that says, you know, when it is he, we really mean she as well as he, I have an issue with. There's nothing wrong with saying the chair shall. You know, the leadership team will, as opposed to genderizing it at all.
Yeah, the problem comes up is in sentences where the chair shall do something as he, she, it feels
as
correct,
they,
or a sentence like that.
They
as
feel fit.
Well, again, but then it's a plural, and there may be a translation problem. I don't know. It certainly is offends people who feel the chair is not plural. I trust you're equally opposed to saying she and defining she to be he.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm all about gender equity.
I'm at a loss because I've never found anything other than repeating the chair, you know, to say the chair may make a decision depending on how the chair feels. Can work.
Well,
the sentences become awkward.
Let's see if we have a problem. As we're drafting it, let's see
okay.
if we have a problem.
Okay.
So the chair may, as it is felt reasonably. Yeah, there are ways to bludgeon these sentences, I think.
Yeah, they tend to become awkward sentence structures. But yes, I'm happy to put it in abeyance, but keep an eye out for it as we're drafting.
Okay, thanks.
Tijani, are you back? Jenny probably is not back. Holly, you have your hand up.
Yeah, Olivier and I have had a bit of a chat as to what we do. The thing that I seem to get around it, and it's, Cheryl may not like it either, is just to do S/HE. It becomes she/he, but it's not much better than the S in brackets. But if we are using sentences that are properly constructed, and it starts off as a singular noun and then coming up with they, it is awkward. So anything we do is going to be reasonably awkward.
Of course, other languages do not necessarily have the two pronouns be different only by the first letter.
But as Olivia has pointed out, French has a problem as well.
Yeah, they doesn't translate in French because they have there are two they's.
Yes.
I think I'm going to take it under advisement for this group, and I think we will take it under advisement for the whole drafting team to let's be sensitive to it and play it by ear and try to come up with something that's not offensive to everyone. But maybe we'll find we don't have the problem. And one more call to see if Jordanity's back yet.
He's in the chat, mate.
It's ringing with no answer, says Adigo. Tijani is typing. It didn't ring there. Okay, if and when Tijani gets back or if he chooses to type, we will honor that. That finishes the review of all previous meetings, and now we can go on to new stuff. The two items which we have not addressed at all yet are metrics and then remediation. What happens if the metrics indicate a problem?
Yes.
If you go into the document that is labeled October 2009, the very lead-in to it talks about...
Is that on the same page, Alan, or is that...
No, it is not on the same... It's a link on... The third link on item 5 of the agenda. I don't know if Matt can pull it up quickly or not.
My agenda just doesn't have any links.
Maybe you need to refresh it.
Mm.
It's an item called Metrics, and there should be three links after it.
Okay, let's see, my screen doesn't have...
They were there for quite a while, so I'm not sure when you captured it.
I haven't touched it. Okay. Matt, can you just put a link in if you don't have a new page?
I can put a link to it.
Yes, yeah, okay, that'd be good.
It's a long link. It is a PDF, Matt. It is a PDF, Matt, if that... Knowing that makes it any easier.
Okay, we've got it. So this is clarifying, Ellen, it's a discussion paper on ANAC at large, AAL, volunteer performance management.
That is the document.
Thank you.
Now, if you go into the top of the second page, it does talk about possible metrics.
Yep.
And the metrics that we had used before, and you can look at the current Rule 21, which lists the metrics. This is a slightly expanded version that is attendance at the various meetings and teleconferences, and that will include meetings of the target group for liaisons and you know, people with who are representing ALAC to other groups, where that is practical. It may not always be practical. Counting mailing list postings, voting records, and some measure of the responsibilities taken on and whether they were fulfilled or not. Now, not all of these are purely quantitative, but these are the ones that at the time, and we're talking 4 years ago, that we came up with as being some sort of measure. It does not necessarily measure value of contributions, but at least it does measure whether there are efforts taken to meet the criteria. And the floor is open for people who have thoughts on this. Can we do better than this list? If not, do we just import it as is, or how do we change it?
Alan, because I'm looking at the PDF, I don't have my, can't get my hand up.
Okay.
I gather this is the list of metrics. Are you going to put, where relevant, some kind of numbers, or are we just going to say these are the metrics and leave it at the discretion, saying we expect you to attend X. We mail this posting is probably a difficult one. Do you do it numerically, or do you simply say, well, what you've added by mail, what do you mean by mail list postings? Because frankly, sometimes you can have be completely inundated by stuff that's completely irrelevant. Yeah, and I'm just wondering, do you put numbers here, or do you leave it up to discretion, saying we are looking for this kind of percentage, or with mail, we're looking this postings, we're looking for this, voting records, we're looking of this, and leave it flexible, but some indication of what you're actually trying to measure?
I think, Holly, you're jumping to the next step
of
how do we measure good metrics versus bad. This is just what do we want to keep track of? So you're jumping one step ahead. And you know, obviously those are difficult questions, and I'm avoiding them because I don't know the answers. it dawns on me, by the way, that we didn't have much in wikis when this was written, so wiki doesn't show up there. Somehow it would have to show up. And I don't know whether we could even count, you know, changes to wikis or posts or comments or things like that. So part of this is a technology, and we're not going to hire 3 staff people to comb the web and find out how much you've been doing. So some of these may be completely impractical. But that's what this group is mandated to make recommendations on metrics, both what do we measure and as Holly was alluding to, how do we measure them and what numbers are good and what numbers are bad. And this is my, you know, the first thing we're talking about, so I'm looking for direction on how to go from here. Tijani, are you back, and is your hand up?
Yes. I am back.
Do you want to go back to the previous discussion, or
I think that we can call this the criteria of participation, but certainly not metrics. We are not measuring anything here. We don't have any figure. So, if we want them to be metrics, we need to define the quantity of attendance, the quantity of meeting posting, etc., etc.
Good point. Noted. So the first question is, are there other criteria of participation we want to put in this list? The next question, of course, we'll go to is indeed the metrics. But to use Tijani's terminology, which I think is good, are there any other criteria that we should be listing here other than, obviously, we should be adding wikis? Again, not sure how we measure it, but certainly participation through wikis is relevant. Any thoughts? Anyone still awake?
I don't know if just waking up.
Perfect time to go.
Thinking.
Sorry, who was that?
This is Eduardo. I was just thinking.
Ah.
Nothing comes to my mind now.
Well, do we need a metric for how much one thinks?
Maybe.
Olivier, as our current and reigning chair, do you have any thoughts on this?
I think we should put a meter in each one's heads. anyway, yeah. No, I don't. That was satirical, by the way. It's Olivia for the transcript. I'm also thinking about this. Okay, still early on the metrics discussion.
Okay, let's go over all of the things we need to discuss. And by then, I think we'll be close enough to the 1.5 hour mark to adjourn. But that does mean there are obligations on people to think about this and come up with some proposals. So our next meeting, which will be our last one before Toronto, I'm guessing, can be productive. As Tijani pointed out, these aren't metrics, these are the criteria. We then need metrics. We need numbers for good versus bad. We need to decide, are there absolute criteria that which if you exceed or if you do not exceed some level, you know, we label you as defective. And how do we measure, if at all, how do we try to measure quality of contributions as opposed to volumes? We all know there are people who attend meetings and never say anything. And although that may help quorum, it doesn't help for an effective group. Luckily, there are not many on this meeting in that category. Yes, go ahead.
My hand isn't up because I'm actually reading this PDF. Well, you can measure attendance at various meetings and so forth, and that lends itself to a number. You can measure voting records, so there can be numbers there. I would suggest we have a general heading called criteria. Then you have where you can actually measure it and try to set some kind of percentage so that if you're eligible for voting X number of times and you don't, or you drop below 50% or whatever we decide, there's a number. And then you have criteria, and that's where you have the imponderables, which are going to be quality of contribution, originality of thought, helpfulness, the sorts of things where are you actually adding to the discussion or not in whatever way? Because I just think there are a couple of things here you can't measure but are critical to performance.
I don't disagree. Olivier.
Thank you, Alan. It's Olivier for the transcript. I can't help thinking that I'm kind of living a Groundhog Day, since we often end up stumbling on this metrics thing, that we need metrics is undeniable, but that we need to define those metrics, I think, is probably the hardest task of this working group. In lowercase w, lowercase g, of course. It's one of these things which I just wonder might need a face-to-face actual workshop on designing those and saying, what do we want in there? Because, yes, there is a case of attending meetings, attending conference calls, but we've all said that before. You can attend conference calls and meetings and not say a word and actually be doing everything else in life and leave this in the background, whilst at the same time you could spend a lot of time on that. We've discussed that a number of times, and I think maybe we need to have a way that is constructive to move forward on this and think exactly as what Holly mentioned there, the simple ones that can be recorded, the ones that are hard to record and that are more subjective and not just quantitative, and the ones in between those two. Because there's just not just all of one and all of the other. There's a whole range between one and the other. Thank you.
Okay. I've got my hand up, and now we have Dave and Tijani after that. I'm going to make one comment, a very short one. And, Olivia, I will disagree with you. You said that we need metrics is obvious, or some wording very close to that. I've participated in various groups, volunteer, non-volunteer, for most of my life, and that's 40-odd years of working life. And other than a few classes I attended formally in university during that time, I have never been in a group where we discussed or had metrics. So I don't think it's inevitable. I think it's inevitable because of some experiences we've had. And I think we need to keep on remembering that. Just a bit of editorial comment. And next we have Dave.
Hi, this is Dave Anand here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thanks. Dave Anand Lakshmi here. Regards to the metrics, I think Olivia, as you pointed it out, it's always this, the touchy problem is exactly what are the metrics and determining the subjectiveness of how good is the participation, even if you do meet these measurable criterion. My quick question, though, would these metrics be made public? And the reason I ask that is because I'm thinking one of the problems is that for the railroads anyway, that don't have any knowledge of whether their railroad appointed ALAC representative is performing or not performing. You know, how does the railroad find out? Is it that, that's just one question. Second point, perhaps the metrics is, as I say, this is going to be the first flag indicator. We look at the worst case scenarios, the persons that are not voting, who are not making quorum, the low-level metrics, attendance, wiki edits, voting records, responsibilities, once that is tabulated, and if it falls below a certain minimum, okay, that's a red flag, and then we just act upon it. I think it just gets very difficult when you try to do the subjective part. I don't know whether you'll get agreement on it. It always gets very emotional when this topic was brought up during the reloads.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just mindful of that.
Thank you. Certainly in the past, when we've had metrics of hard things that can be measured, we have made them public. Softer ones, I think one probably doesn't want to make public. Tijani, please.
Thank you, Alan. I do agree with Olivier that the metrics should to be decided on in a face-to-face meeting. But to achieve this goal, to make the face-to-face meeting productive and efficient, we need a proposal now, and we need anyone who has ideas to express them now, so that we can at least list all the proposals, and during the face-to-face meeting we can try to understand what is common, what is not common, what is acceptable, what is not acceptable. If we will think during the face-to-face meeting, we will spend the time to discuss and perhaps to fight, and we will never reach anything. Thank you.
I support that 100%, and I would suggest, as an outcome of this meeting, we assign a work assignment to everyone to come up with their version of what we should be doing. I will volunteer before the next meeting to collate them, and out of the next meeting, we should be able to have something for discussion in Toronto if we have the time to do that. Eduardo.
This thing about the metrics, is something that has been there in the ROP all the time. We need to have metrics. I believe the idea of metrics is if you're doing something wrong, we can kick you out, right? Is that why we're doing metrics?
Well, the kick you out part is remediation, which we have to talk about next. and I will talk about it for a short time before the end of this meeting. So let's not use that kick you out as the shorthand of it, because that's about as inflammatory as you can get.
My point is that
remediation can be anything from having a quiet talk with the person to something stronger.
Okay, but my main point is, do we need metrics? That's my point.
Well,
this is a volunteer organization.
There are relatively few people who want to continue doing the job and are not doing it, but will admit to that openly. Therefore, typically, metrics are a way of demonstrating to someone that there is a problem. You asked, have we always had metrics? Ever since we've had the rules of procedure, which goes back to roughly 2007, we have had a section on performance. I'm not sure we called them metrics or not.
Okay. Are there other organizations within ICANN have something similar?
Not that I know of.
So we are the only one that will have metrics.
Sure.
We're probably the only one who felt they needed them. Cheryl, you indicate you want to speak. We have Yovi and then Cheryl. Oh, I'm sorry, Olivier first, then Yovi, then Cheryl. And we have 7 minutes left, and we need to talk about remediation, so please be quick.
Thank you, Alan. With regards to remediation, just shoot them. With regards to the metrics part, I think one of the things as chair is to have the complaint emails from people, general at-large members who might not be members of the ALAC, complaining about their leadership. And it's interesting to see how there are some people out there that are particularly upset to see that some ALAC members, some RALO leaders, some of the people who are supposed to be representing them in this bottom-up process are not pulling their weight, according to what they see. And it's very difficult for me as the chair to find out the reality of things because I don't have any metrics or anything to look at when I receive those complaints. So nine cases out of ten, I either have to vigorously take the side of the person who is in place because I already know how much work they might be doing behind the scenes and what doesn't appear to be public. But there are also times when I have no clue at all about what that person is doing, and I'm wasting an enormous amount of time trying to find out what these people are doing. And in fact, there are cases, and thankfully they are a minority, as you said, Alan, and I'm glad that they are a minority, but there are still some cases of people who are in positions. Their circumstances might have changed. They might have other things on their plate at the moment. And it's not a short-term thing. It's a long-term thing. And whilst Carlton says they should have the common good sense to withdraw, they don't. As blunt as that. And there is nothing that one can do about it. And I think it's very unfair because if we don't lose the people that don't withdraw, then we are losing the people at the edges that want to go and want to do something because that seat is actually taken by someone who's just using it for, well, not for the public good effectively. That's all. Thank you.
The hardest part, of course, is where those people are then reappointed by their organization to do it again. Yovi, quickly, and then I'd like to speak for a couple of minutes on remediation before we adjourn.
And then
Cheryl.
Okay, yeah, me speaking. Thank you. I'm sorry I don't have the CDF document opening now. I completely agree with the metrics, but my comment is that we have to maybe when we are setting the metrics, think about this organization like from some regions. You can have people coming to ALAC. It is true that everybody doesn't have the same skills. So I think what is very important is that we have to have this in mind and when we are setting metrics. Somebody can come at least for the beginning. That might be difficult the first year can be a problem for the person. So just I'm raising this point to be sure that when we are setting the metrics, there are some factors to consider. But I totally agree that we need to set metrics because without metrics, we cannot have people really contribute to the work. Thank you.
Thank you, Yovi. Cheryl.
Okay, Cheryl for the record and fairly quickly. I wanted to the homework assignment, Alan, thanks, but can the homework assignment be based on the standing document that you presented earlier in the group, if we could all look at what is the current set of expectations and requirements as listed in that three-page document, and perhaps make some notes in preparation for our next call on how we think any of those things can be measured, which ones of them have perhaps greater or lesser priority. In fact, any of them may or may not be able to be turned into metrics, some more easily than others. Eduardo, one of the reasons we needed them, apart from all things you've heard from several other speakers, is that we are in a peculiar position of being 100% dependent under normal circumstances for ICANN funding to conduct our meetings and our face-to-face activities. We are not business organisations, we are not ISPs, we are not groups of registries, we are not in anything that has, under the normal circumstances, a profit or commercial interest in what ICANN does. And so we don't pay for ourselves to be engaged with all of this, right down to paying for interpretation and translation. That's all coming out of those coffers, and we have to justify that spend. And that was a very big driver, along with the when people don't pull their weight, it's occupying a valuable space at the table where other people could be bringing the voices of their region and their ALSs. I'll end it there, but we could do a whole lot more. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Cheryl. And I'll point out that Olivier says right now the problem cases are not the majority. They used to be by a very significant amount. So things have gotten better. Are they good enough that we can avoid doing this right now? That's a judgment call we need to make. Okay, remediation. The document that you see, that is the document that is labeled the October 2009 document, was, I freely admit, I wrote it. I wrote it with the very active participation of a number of other people who I will be kind to them and not name them. So it wasn't my ideas purely being represented there, but I was the person who did pen them. I presented them at a meeting. I've also included the PowerPoint I used at that meeting. And to put it kindly, I was ripped apart.
Shredded.
Because of, specifically by a number of people who felt that nobody should judge them. And moreover, not only should no one judge them, but under no conditions should the ALAC have the right to remove someone who was put on there by Arelo. Now, I'll point out, legalistically, the ALAC could have such a right if the ALAC chose to, just as the board and the GNSO has the right to remove people regardless of how they got there in some cases. But that's a judgment call of the ALAC. So there was great objection. This document was reworked to remove some of the more offensive parts of it. I can't find the copy right now, and we're looking, trying to find a version of it. And as soon as I find it, I will post it and let you see it as well. But so we are not posting this as this is the exact document that we want to go forward with, but it is one that did have a lot of thought at one point, and admittedly at a point where the situation was worse than it is today. The threat of being removed was never perceived as something that would be carried out, but the threat of it, we thought, might be an incentive for people to work harder or to put more time
Alan, Cheryl, here, the ALAC. We actually have, and you won't be supported for travel.
Say that again?
We did have, and you won't be supported for travel.
Yes, we did. Let's not get into that right now. I may want to say something I don't want to say.
Even that's too contentious, unfortunately.
Yes. That didn't show up here, by the way, but that is an action we have taken that is threatening not to support people. Which doesn't remove them, but just says they don't come to meetings. In any case, what I'd like everyone in this group to do is, again, read the document, take it with a grain of salt. It was presented as something which was not adopted, and perhaps for good reason, but I'd like to see contributions on the wiki, on the mailing list, and certainly, you know, for discussion at the next meeting, but if we can have some concrete proposals prior to the next meeting, that would be useful.
Can I just do one final thing just on something Olivia raised, which was the workshopping? I actually think there is merit of workshopping. If we do a bit of a straw man, I think that's fine. But I would suggest it's a workshop activity that should happen after the rules without these metrics specifically being outlined, but certainly having the criteria and key overarching principles in the rules. That would need to workshop with the new ALAC because I don't think it would work any other way. Now, preferably it would be at a meeting where more than just the ALAC was in attendance so that they could get not only the feel of their regional leaders and at-large structures who might be able to attend the virtual or actual meeting when it happens, but it also puts them on notice because I must say if we'd have had more at-large representatives in the rooms that you were presenting some of these things in, we might have had very different attitudes in some of the regions.
Well, and if we had at-large people in rooms where their ALAC members decided to take 2 days off and go see the sites, we might have different reactions, but that doesn't typically happen. I want to read into the record something Carlton wrote. And he said, we have a bigger problem because in my RALO, there is a widely held position that the RALO is sovereign, and sovereign is in quotes. That this is a matter that must be expressed somewhere, explicitly addressed somewhere. And I think that is, in fact, what we are doing at this point. According to ICANN bylaws and such, the ALAC does have the ability to remove people should it choose to exercise that kind of right and should it put the rules in place to do that. The question is, do we want to? And that's the harder question. And, you know, we need to ultimately, as the ALAC gets more and more visibility, we are also subject to more and more scrutiny. And we have to make sure that, you know, we're doing our job and viewed as doing our job, and that's the challenge of this group, to try to put process and rules in place to allow us to do that. Olivier and then Eduardo, we are over time, so quickly, please.
Thank you, Alan. It's Olivier. I just wanted to come back to your mentioning of the travel support, and I think that I used to think that withdrawal of travel support was quite a childish thing to threaten to people until I ended up on the other side of the fence and actually being part of the arrangement for the travel support and finding out how much some people are ready to fight beck and tooth to travel to an ICANN meeting whilst we haven't heard from them for 2, 3, 4 months.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell us you were one of the ones we withdrew travel support from.
Not at all. No, no. I sometimes wish that. Who knows? That'd be great, being able to run everything remotely.
Maybe you need to share some of those stories. Obviously, cleaning them up and making it untraceable, but share some of the stories because I think that.
No, but it's the way travel support works, and I'm not going to delve into the whole thing. But there is a list of all of the members. And we send it out and basically find out from some people we haven't heard from for months, suddenly they answer very fast and say, yes, I want to be on there. Or, yes, of course I'm going to travel. And you just think,
Maybe we need a process prior to that list going out. Again,
maybe that list can be linked somehow to the metrics, but that's something which we can discuss afterwards. And that's why I think it's such a vast subject. There needs to be some discussion taking place.
And that all comes, you know, that may be part of the remediation. Eduardo.
Just a quick comment about the comment from Carlton about the soaring from some of the rallies. One of the cases is what I said there, appointee, the person that they send for the nomination non-com appointee, they expect the one that got more votes to win. That might be not the case. That's only my comment.
I'm sorry, say that again. I missed.
The thing about the sovereign comment that Carlton said, that one of the case in point is the position of the La Crowley, where they voted for for two people to be the non-com appointee from ALAC, right? Mm-hmm. From that rally. And right now we in ALAC, we're voting for two of them. One of them in the rally got more votes than the other.
Yeah, understand.
In ALAC. Okay, so that's La Crowley is expecting for the one that got more votes to win. But that might not be the case. So that's in relation to the comment that Carlton is saying about Soren, that some rallies believe that whoever they selected for the more votes should win. In that specific case.
Yeah, we certainly need clarity. We have Holly and then Cheryl, if you want your last word, and then we'll adjourn.
Just one thing we forgot. We are all supposed to be, if we go to get travel support to go to a meeting, we're supposed to put in reports of the meetings we attended. And what our metric ought to be, what reports that are posted if you have attended a travel supported meeting.
That was not part of the rules in 2008, which is perhaps why that's not in that list. You may certainly add it to the list of possible metrics.
I think it should be there. Okay, I will do. Thank you.
Cheryl, any last words?
I was actually just in terms of the reporting there that Holly was referring to. That was an additional process that we put in that not only ensured that the sponsored travel was for ALAC and at large, were at the ICANN meeting doing ALAC things, but they were also, when we weren't physically in our own rooms, elsewhere, and that's how we went with the divvying up of who's going to be where and what you're doing. I think they're valuable metrics. They certainly weren't, they're a request, not a requirement at this stage, but it is the sort of thing that you can have a measure linked to a role, and occasionally, if the role is you are a sponsored traveller and attending a meeting, whether that meeting is, be it an ICANN meeting or IGF meeting or a regional meeting, some form of reporting is, I would have thought, fairly bog standard, that what we think and what we get is often to be very...
Right, and I'll point out, when we talk about attendance at meetings, we have said yes or no to the meeting and treated the ICANN meeting as one entity. We could be doing it on a session-by-session basis for the ICANN meetings, which would note where you know, we've held ALAC meetings where one ALAC member showed up or two ALAC members showed up. Now, maybe there were valid reasons, maybe there weren't, but no, there are no records. There are no records in the world which show that after the fact.
Yes.
So,
And if we actually say it would be good if people could attend various meetings as a way of reporting back, then that actually enhances the input into the membership. But that's only if people report back.
And if their reports are useful. I will call the meeting to an end. Please look at the documents that we haven't discussed in detail on this thing. Let's see some traffic on the wikis and on the mailing list, whichever you feel more comfortable with, and we will meet again in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank
bye.
You.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Gracias. Bye.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.